time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis and the week Harry became a Bud Man.
This is the week, Bob. good morning to you. He had so loved Harry Carey, of course, as a broadcaster, but he started his second gig as a Budweiser pitchman 40 years ago, created by a local ad agency. The client, Budweiser, wanted a well-known person, a Cubs fan who was relatable, no airs about him, you know, the kind of guy you could drink a Budweiser with, and they didn't have to look too long and far to find Harry Carey. It was like perfect. So he was cast, and summer of 84, Harry Carey began a long relationship with Budweiser, appearing in TV, radio, billboards, all kinds of endorsements. Cubs fan, Budman, as he was known, and we pulled one of the most iconic ads featuring the legendary Harry Carey. Here he is out of the broadcast booth and into the bleachers surrounded by raucous Cubs fans.
You know, a lot of people think I have the best seat in the house. No way. The best seat in the house is right here, cheering on the Cubs with the greatest fans in the world and the greatest beer in the world, Budweiser. Yeah, nothing quenches a Cub fan's thirst for victory quite like the king of beer.
You. 1984. Back in the early 70s, Harry actually kept drinking diaries, didn't he?
This is fascinating. Our mutual friend Grant DePorter from Harry Carey's restaurants passed this along to me. He was saying that they actually have him on display there at one of the restaurants. He said that Harry Carey used to keep drinking diaries back in the day in the early 70s. These were handwritten notes, kind of like an accountant's ledger, listing his bar stops, where he went, who he drank with. 1,362 bar stops in 1971, Bob. 1,242 bar stops in 1972, and he went into elaborate detail, you know, and this is supposedly for tax purposes, so we could write it off, but Grant gave me some of the highlights. He was with Wilt Chamberlain, Frank Gifford, Brent Musburger, other fellow broadcasters, Fergie Jenkins, Bears quarterback Sid Luckman, Gale Sayers, and some of the establishments he frequented: the Palmer House, Miller's Pub, still there, the Playboy Club, Eli's, Butch McGuire's, Mother's, and the Lodge on Division. 70 times he went to Sully's, a nearby bar off of Division there, calling style the Hang Up, 70 times just in 1972, Bob. And then Grant also sent me some of the pages that were just this week. This week alone, he drank with legendary baseball player Ted Williams at Mr. Kelly's, now where Gibson's is. He drank with sportscaster Dick Enberg and Emmett O'Neill, who was the chief of staff to Senator Dixon. He hang out at the Pump Room with Cup in Irv Cupsonet's famous booth. The bar tab, by the way, the whole bar tab for the night, $18.60.
Number one, I like beer.
Yeah, we know that.
I don't know how many beers you got for $18.60 today. That might buy two. I don't know. But Harry also drank this week with Bill Sullivan, who owned the bar Sully's. He was with Jack Brickhouse at the Lodge. It's interesting.
So crazy that he kept a track of that. This
naturally, Budweiser is my favorite. Besides the fact that I think it tastes better than any other beer.
All right.
Did he mention the Hot Seat Totsie? Because he always talked about the Hot Seat Totsie.
Yep. Yeah. Harry's week. This week, back in 72 and 73, I guess. Those are the ones we just mentioned. But
right.
Whole lot of years. More than 1,300 bar stops in 71, over 1,200 in 72. Nothing in there about Dairy Queen, huh?
Nothing like that. But he did stop after he decided it wasn't worth the time, Bob. So after 72, there was no more.
Okay, from beer, we go to some hot dog history.
I know you could write the books on this, Bob, the hot dog history. But I found something interesting factoid I thought you and your listeners might appreciate. The hot dog traces its roots back to Frankfurt, Germany. And before that, there's even some evidence of it in ancient Rome, encased meats and that kind of thing. But the important development of putting it on a bun or in a bun has strong Chicago ties. August 1893, there are stories about the hot dogs being served on fresh baked buns at the Chicago World's Fair. Even recorded in the Smithsonian, by the way. Hot dogs and buns became a popular offering when they put them on display, started selling them in the old Vienna section of the Midway, at the old World's Fair, and just became super popular. Now, they do acknowledge that the buns appear appearance was documented earlier on Coney Island at Nathan's. But the popularity is it just exploded with the World's Fair, and they suddenly were the thing. They're serving them across the country. A lot of Chicago area immigrants started serving them in hot dog carts after the fair. Here's hot dog historian Russell Lewis from the Chicago History Museum.
You have a very large population of Germans coming to Chicago, and what they're bringing is their sausage tradition. Especially as America in the 20th century is becoming more urbanized, and the pace and speed of life is increasing, people are looking for on-the-go, cheap food. It really was the first,
the original fast food. Greeks and other ethnic groups also owned veggie stands, so it didn't take long for vendors to combine greens with meats.
You got some competition among all these immigrant vendors, and so they're looking for ways to distinguish their hot dogs from the other guy.
Throw a salad on top of it.
Exactly. I drag mine to the garden. You know, I don't know about you, but look at mine.
And of course, the hot dog debuted in the old Vienna section of the Midway at the
Pretty
fair.
Pretty cool to think about that. And look what we got today.
Yeah. This week in 1991 in Lollapalooza history, Anna?
Perry Farrell, that is. You hear him right there with his band Jane's Addiction back in the day. Remember, Bob, this is a good time to remind the kids that Lollapalooza started as a farewell tour for Jane's Addiction back in 1991. It was this multi-band, multimedia, city-to-city kind of extravaganza thing. The first stop in Chicago, this was this week in 1991, part of that traveling tour in Tinley Park. Raise your hand if you were there way back then. Mm-hmm. It was at the World Music Theater. It's been called a ton of things over the years. Tweeter Center, the Midwest Bank Amphitheater, whatever. But August 3rd, they made a stop there. And Perry Farrell had said, you know, after this, it's over. My band is breaking up. And this is a celebration of us and music and arts and everything like that. He was kind of ahead of his time, if you think about it, with the whole music fest thing. But in fact, a fight broke out with his band members in Tinley Park that day, and they're just like, all right, they're done.
Well, I'll tell you, the kinds of acts that they book now, totally different.
It's totally different. Totally unrecognizable to me, actually, in my generation. But actually, there are always a few headliners that you know. But then I think the cool part about it, Bob, is you get to discover really cool music that maybe you didn't know too much about. And it's a very cool thing that we have here since 2005 in Grand Park, Chicago.
And now food history. And I always say I got to have this because it's always named best sandwich around here, isn't it?
Rick O'Benny's restaurant in Bridgeport has just attracted so much attention for this particular sandwich over the years. While the restaurant in some form has been there since the 50s, it was the next generation this week, 1976, that next leveled the whole thing. The kids introduced a sandwich so delicious, so unique. USA Today called it the best sandwich in the United States. Anthony Bourdain visited, so many others to review it. The breaded steak sandwich, 2 pounds of breaded steak smothered in melted mozzarella and marinara, sprinkled with the family's homemade jardinera. You can do a 5-pound version if you'd like. Oh my gosh. It's one of the city's food gems. So if you haven't checked it out, here we pulled a great clip here. Chicago's best TV show invited none other than Tom Skilling to leave Bradley Place, come on over to the south side to Bridgeport and try the Rick O'Benny sandwich. Here's what happened.
Now, have you had a breaded steak sandwich?
I have not. This is absolutely, I mean, oh my word.
So I'm actually bringing something to one of the most classic personalities in Chicago that you've never had.
I've got to get out more, you know?
You need to get out and get some air is what you need to do. You know what I mean?
That's right.
So you may not be able to do the weather cast in about an hour because you may be sleeping. All right, we're going to bite into this right now.
God. I've got a big mouth, but even my mouth is going to have trouble getting around this. This is gorgeous.
Cheers.
Oh, yeah. That's like dying and going to heaven.
Oh, Tommy.
Oh, my word. You keep doing this to me. Hey, you and I are going to become best friends. And that cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Sunny skies, full belly, impossible
there
food coma.
There you go.
That's the forecast. See you later. Take care.
See you later, folks.
I think Tom eventually gave up the 2-pound breaded steak and cheese sandwiches, didn't he?
He trimmed down a little bit, didn't he? And that was good for his health.
And now let's have dessert, and we go back to 1979.
On to dessert. Bob, gotta love Matt's Cookies, a Wheeling, Illinois invention. A guy named Matt Pierce said, you know, I want to make a cookie just like grandma made or mom made, that homemade chocolate chip cookie, but you can still buy it in the store. You don't have to go to a bakery to get it. So he did. He went to work on it. No artificial flavors either, like the kinds of ingredients you could pronounce. He didn't want preservatives. All the stuff Marianne tells you about, Bob, that's what he decided to do. I think he might have had Marianne as a consultant for this cookie. So he launched him at Jewel and Dominick's, and a huge hit, leading to the establishment of a major cookie company. Now, they did fall out of favor for a little while because that cookie area got kind of crowded, but coming back again, I think, because of the desire to have these kinds of cookies that are not only delicious, but also with natural ingredients.
Healthy cookies. I'm all for that.
Marianne approved.
Started in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
I'll run the ingredients list by her again.
Just to be sure.
Thanks, Anna.
Of course.